بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا، من يحده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، فإن أحسن الكلام كلام الله، وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وإن شر الأمور محدثاتها، وكل محدثة بدعة، وكل بدعة ضلالة، وكل ضلالة في النار. So today is our second lesson, lesson number two, on this work by Sheikh Hafiz Al-Hakami, rahimahullah, أعلام سنة المنشورة. And so in the first introductory lesson last week, we discovered a bit about his biography. We read the introduction of the book, and the book provides the basic foundations of the Muslim belief, the Muslim creed, and it does so in a very simple way, by way of questions and answers. And in each of the answers, the Sheikh, rahimahullah, he provides evidences from the Quran and likewise from the Sunnah. And we have a number of explanations in front of us. We have some commentary from Sheikh Ibn Uthaymeen, rahimahullah, Sheikh Salih Al-Fawzan, and likewise Sheikh Ahmed Al-Najmi, rahimahullah, who happened to be a companion and associate of Sheikh Hafiz Al-Hakami back in the previous century, back in the 40s, 50s. And as you know, Sheikh Hafiz Al-Hakami passed away at the age of 35, very young, whereas Sheikh Ahmed remained alive till 2007. So the Sheikh has written an explanation, a commentary, which we are benefiting from. So in the previous lesson, we started with the first question. What was the first question? It is, ما أول ما يجب على العباد? What is the first thing which is obligatory upon the servants? What is the first wajib, the first obligation upon everybody? And the Shaykh said that the first thing which is obligatory upon everybody is to have knowledge of the affair for which Allah created them. To have knowledge of the issue, the affair for which Allah created you. Notice in the answer, he didn't actually mention what that affair is, because he left that to the second question, right? So he simply said, he defined it generally, what is the first obligation? The first obligation upon all the servants of Allah is to have knowledge of that for which He created them. Now we know that we were created for Allah's worship, so this will be answered in the second question, insha'Allah ta'ala. But here he simply alluded to the issue, and so from the affairs that we discussed and we looked at in the previous lesson, we took from Sheikh Ibn Uthaymeen, rahimahullah, that the first obligation is basically to say the two testimonies of faith, to say ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. Right, this is the first obligation upon every single person on the face of this earth, whether he is a Christian, whether he is a Jew, whether he is a Buddhist, whether he is an atheist. No matter who that person is, this is the first obligation. We looked at two issues. The first issue is, how can this be the first obligation? Why isn't the first obligation, for example, to prove Allah's existence, to prove that Allah exists through, you know, rational evidences, through reason, through philosophy, as some people do? Why is that not the first obligation? Because this then leads us into the issue of, well, what's the first thing that we call people to? And so this we know by way of revelation, that the first thing that the revelation calls to is to single out Allah in worship. which is Tawheed, which is to worship Allah alone. Worship no other thing and worship only Allah. And likewise, when the Messenger of Allah, when he sent Mu'adh bin Jabal radiallahu anhu to the people in Yemen, and they were Jews and Christians, he said, let the first thing that you call them to be to single out Allah in worship, to worship only Allah alone. So what the revelation tells us is, the evidence of revelation is that the first thing that the Messenger and all the messengers, when we read their stories, the first thing they called their people to was to single out Allah in worship. It was never to call them to believe Allah exists, because this is not an issue disputed by anybody. Nobody disputes that there is a creator. And we proved this in the previous lesson by quoting something from one of the most prominent famous philosophers of the last century, a man, French, you know, man by the name of Jean-Paul Sartre. He's a very famous man. And his philosophy, his lifestyle philosophy, is something which has greatly affected the Western culture, right? That philosophy is, there is no God, there are no morals, there is no truth except what you make to be the truth. So basically, you are your own hero, you are your own God, you decide what is right for you, you decide what is truth for you, right? You are the one who determines everything. Right, so there is no God, there is no hereafter, there is no creation, there is no resurrection. You are just here to be, you just exist. The philosophy is called existentialism. You just here, you just exist. So therefore, you've got to make your own truth, you've got to devise your own truth, you've got to devise your own morals, you've got to devise what makes you happy, what makes you fulfilled. This is what you pursue in life. Right, so this philosophy, this man invented, or he spoke of this philosophy, but In some revealing discussions with his partner in crime, he used to have a mistress, and they used to do, you know, evil things. So in a revealing interview that was published in a book in 1991, I quoted it to you last time, that this man basically saying that I don't see myself as specks of dust that just appeared, but as a being that was expected, prefigured, called forth. In other words, a being that could only come from a creator. And this idea of a creating hand that created me refers me back to God naturally. Naturally, he says, this is not like a concrete idea in my mind, but it's every time I think of myself, then it's this idea that is set in motion, meaning that I'm prefigured, I'm configured, I was meant to be here, I was expected. Then he says that it contradicts many of my other ideas, because his other ideas are that there is no God, that there is no hereafter, there's no resurrection, right? So he says, but it is there floating vaguely around, it's floating around. And when I think of myself, I often think rather in this way, for want of being able to think otherwise. Meaning that whenever I think about myself, it's only this idea that's set in motion, and I can't really think of any other idea. So what he's really admitting to, what he's admitting to, that even as an atheist, he knows that deep down, when he thinks of himself, he can only think of a creator by necessity, because he can't think of anything else. And this is why the scholars, they say that, you know, belief in Allah, belief in a Rabb, in a Lord, a Maker, is fitri. It is embedded in the fitrah. It is daruri, meaning that it is just simply necessary. You can't escape it. You can't escape this belief. And as Ibn al-Qayyim said as well, that when you reflect upon the whole of the world, the upper part, the lower part, meaning that all the inputs into your senses, the sense of hearing, the sense of seeing, the sense of reflection, every input that comes in, when you just observe, it forces by necessity you to believe that this world has a maker and a creator. So When this is the case, you can now better understand why the first obligation is simply to single out Allah in worship, to testify that there is none worthy of worship except Allah. So if you were, as a Muslim, you wanted to call, let's say this man was alive, he was living, and you went to him, and then by his own admission, the first thing you would say to him is that deep inside your soul, you know that you are made, you are created, you are configured, you know that this, you know, that you are expected to come into this world which has been made for you. You know this deep down, right? So believe in this Lord that you know is in your fitrah, and single him out in worship and be grateful to him for all the favors and bounties that you enjoy. That's the first thing you say to him, right? There's no need here now to start wrangling about, okay, what's the evidence that Allah exists or doesn't exist? You know, this argument, that argument, because now you're just diverting away and diluting something that he knows concretely within his own soul. And he will then use that to his own advantage to confuse and muddle and befuddle and to, you know, take you on a diversionary path, because he's admitting that I know deep inside the thought that comes to my mind is there's a creator. But in opposition to this inner conviction, I have this other philosophy, I have this other idea of life, right? So he's fleeing from the truth. He's trying to bury and conceal what his fitrah, his disposition is telling him. So we don't want to go in that direction and go in that area of confusion, diversion. We just want to tell him straight that your fitrah is telling you that you have a Lord, so single out this Lord in worship. Right? So this leads us to the issue of methodology. The methodology of calling to Allah. How do we invite other people to Allah? Right? Because many of the Muslim groups, many of the Muslim sects, the mutakallimun, these are the speculative theologians who followed the way of philosophy and followed, you know, and were affected by Greek philosophy, Greek logic, and they were affected by these ideas. And so they made big mistakes in this area. They said, no, the first obligation is, you know, we have to prove Allah exists. And to prove Allah exists, we have to show that the universe began. And then they used weak philosophical arguments, and they made a big mess. And they drew many, many Muslims into that mess and drew them into great confusion. And the arguments they were using never proved the universe had a beginning. It could prove the exact opposite, that the universe was already eternal. So anyhow, that's a different issue. So what we should learn from this thing then is that the first obligation, there are statements which I didn't get round to mentioning in the previous lesson, so I'll mention them now. Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah, he said, for example, the Prophet ﷺ did not invite anyone from the creation to, you know, start making observation in the world, you know, in the heavens, and, you know, nor did he call them to simply believe in a creator. Right? So he didn't begin by saying, believe in a Lord, or start looking around and find evidence for the Lord. He didn't say that. Rather, the first of what he called them to was the Shahada, Shahadatan, right? Which is to testify none has the right to be worshipped except Allah, and that Muhammad is his messenger. He commanded his companions with that. And this is from what the leading imams in religion, the leading scholars in religion, this is what they are united upon. He also said, Rahimullah, the Salaf and the leading scholars are agreed that the first of which the servants are commanded with is the Shahadatan, and that whoever does that before maturity is not commanded to renew them following maturity. Meaning that if you're raised in a Muslim household, you're born with Muslim parents, and your Muslims teach you, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh, and you say this as you grow up, then this is sufficient for you. You don't need to repeat this now once you become, you know, you reach buluh, you become mature, you become an adult, you reach the age of puberty or maturity, you don't need to repeat it again. Right? And the Muslim scholars are agreed upon this point. Your Islam is valid. Also, the statement of Ibn al-Qayyim, rahimahullah, Tawheed is the first of that by which Islam is entered and the last of that by which the world is departed from. Right? So the first thing that a non-Muslim enters into Islam with is Tawheed, which is to worship only Allah alone and not to worship any others. That's what you enter into. So therefore, you don't enter into Islam by saying, I believe there's a creator. Because that doesn't make you a Muslim, just to believe in a creator. Because nobody really disputes there's a creator. Right? Even there are those, for example, they are called the deists. There's an idea called deism. Right? So these are people from the philosophers and others, thinkers and others. They know for sure that there has to be a creator. So they believe in a creator, but then they do not accept the notion of revelation and religion and the halal and the haram, right? Because they believe this is all invented by man. So what they say is that, yes, there's a creator, but when this creator created his creation, after that he just ignored it, had nothing to do with it, he doesn't intervene in any way, he doesn't rule it, govern it, control it. He's just completely aloof. And this is from the most evil and vile of ideologies and statements. Right? That you can say that the Lord, the Maker, the Creator, created all this creation with all the wisdoms, with all the end goals, with all the... And then he just completely just ignores it. This is an evil and vile saying, and it is a revilement upon Allah, the Lord and the Creator. But there are people who believe this belief. So if you were to say, well, Islam is to prove Allah exists, and now someone believes Allah exists, there's a Lord, there's a Creator, well, now that to you is this person has become a Muslim, and that's not Islam. Islam, the first thing you enter into Islam with is Tawheed, which is, after recognizing there's a Lord and Creator, you single Him out in worship. You worship Him alone. You don't worship a prophet, you don't worship Jesus, you don't worship an idol, you don't worship other men, dead or alive, you don't worship the stars, you don't worship the moon, you don't worship the trees, you abandon the worship of everything and you worship only Allah alone. You call upon Him alone, you bow to Him alone, you prostrate to Him alone, you rely upon Him alone, and so on and so forth. Right? This is Tawheed. Likewise, Ibn Kathir, rahimahullah, the Mufassir, he said, the first obligation upon the servants is to know that there is none worthy of worship but Allah alone without any partners. That's the first obligation, to have that knowledge. See, he didn't say the first obligation is to know that the universe began. Or the first obligation is to know that the world has a maker and a creator. That's not the first obligation. The first obligation is to testify none has the right to be worshipped except Allah alone without any partners. Likewise, Shaykhul Islam Ibn Abdul Wahhab, rahimullah, he said, know that Allah obligated knowledge of the testimony of La ilaha illallah before the obligation of prayer and fasting. That a servant investigates the meaning of the kalima is greater in obligation than the obligation of investigating the rulings of prayer and fasting. And the unlawfulness of shirk and believing and the unlawfulness of shirk and having belief in the taghut, in the false gods, is greater than the unlawfulness of marrying mothers and aunties. Right? So what he said there is that to have the knowledge that none has the right to be worshipped except Allah alone, this is the greater obligation than even prayer and fasting. And likewise, to have the knowledge that the unlawfulness, that it is haram to commit shirk, this unlawfulness, it being haram, is even greater than if you were to actually, then the unlawfulness of marrying your own mother and your own aunties, because we know that's haram for you to do so. That's haram. But shirk is even more haram, greater in being haram than these despicable, vile deeds. Right? And then we have the statement of Sheikh Salih Al-Fawzan from the contemporary scholars. He said, the first obligation upon the servants is the worship of Allah. As for knowing Him, then they know Him through the fitrah. Right? So as you've seen already, even the most, you know, arrogant philosophers and atheists like we see here, some of them are very willing to acknowledge and admit that deep down in my soul, there's an idea floating around. I can't escape it. Whenever I think of myself, I can only think that I was meant to be here. There's a creator, and I can't think of anything else. Right? So they are admitting that. So the Sheikh is saying, you know, as for knowing Him, then they know Him through the fitrah, the intellects, through creational evidences and Quranic evidences. Right? So this is why the scholars explain that when it comes to, and this is the method of the Quran. If you look at the method of the Quran, all it does is it points you to the ayat of Allah. It says, do you not see the sun and the moon? Do you not see the livestock, the animals from which you drink, which you ride, from which you take clothes? Do you not see, you know, your partners, your spouses, in whom you find love and mercy? Do you not see, you know, all the winds that bring mercy, the rain that revives the, you know, the earth? Right? So, because this is to remind that individual of the fitrah. Right? Because that fitrah is in there. So like, again, if we had this kafir, if we had him alive here, sat there, we would say exactly what the Quran says. Do you not see, you know, the sending of the winds and how they bring mercy, and the rain revives the earth and brings out vegetation and food which you eat from, which ends up on your table? Do you not acknowledge that you are enjoying the bounty of the Creator that you know is in your, you know, whose knowledge is in your soul? It's like a reminder of the fitrah. This is the method of the Quran. So the point being that this is what the Quran came with, this is what the Sunnah came with, this is the methodology of the prophets when they call to Allah. This is the methodology of the mutakallimun, the philosophers, the speculative theologians like the Jahmiyyah, the Mu'tazila, the Ash'ari, the Maturidi, and whoever followed their way when they delved into this philosophy and tried to, you know, make Islam to be as if it's founded on Allah's existence. That's not in the Quran. It's not in the Sunnah. And that's a deviation away from the way and the methodology of the prophets and messengers. And if you take that path, you're going to be led to tremendous misguidance. Tremendous misguidance. And that's what we see among the Ash'aris, among them is Sufism, among them is worship of the saints, amongst them is innovation. So many evils that they basically fell into. Anyhow, these are the important points, few important points that we really need to take from the first question. And so we were reading from Sheikh Ahmed An-Najmi's explanation. So where we got to, I'm going to continue from that point onwards. So the Sheikh says, فَالْعَبْدُ مَخْلُوقٌ لِلْعِبَادَةِ. So therefore, what do we know? The servant is created for worship. This is not under dispute. Even, like we said, this kafir, this atheist, knows that he is made. He was expected to be here, right? فَالْعَبْدُ مَخْلُوقٌ لِلْعِبَادَةِ. The servant is created for worship. وَهَذِهِ الْعِبَادَةِ مِنْ أَجْلِهَا أَوْجَدَ اللَّهُ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. It is for this worship that mankind worships Allah. Men and jinn worship Allah. It is for this reason that Allah brought into existence the world and the hereafter. وَأَرْسَلَ اللَّهُ الرُّسُلُ وَمِنْ أَجْلِهَا أَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ الْكُتُبُ. And it's for this reason that Allah sent the messengers, and he revealed the books. وَمِنْ أَجْلِهَا خَلَقَ اللَّهُ الْجَنَّةِ وَالنَّارِ. And for this reason, for this purpose, did he create paradise and hellfire. وَمِنْ أَجْلِهَا حَقَّتِ الْحَاقَةِ وَوَقَعَتِ الْوَاقِعَةِ وَالْقَارِعَةِ. And it is for this reason, for this purpose, for this worship, that Al-Haqqa is the name of the inevitable reality, meaning the day of judgment. And Al-Waqi'ah, meaning the great event which is going to happen, which is the day of judgment. And Al-Qari'ah, which is the striking event which is going to happen. These are all names of the day of judgment mentioned in the Quran. Right? That it is for this reason, the worship of Allah alone and mankind being put to trial by way of that, that Allah did all of these things, right? Created the heaven and the earth and the hereafter, the paradise and hellfire, sent the messengers, sent the books, established the day of judgment, establishes the scales and all those other things. It all revolves and returns back to this ibadah, this worshipping Allah alone. And so the Shaykh mentions an ayah in the Quran, because if you look at these names of the Day of Judgment, Al-Haqqa, Al-Waqi'a, Al-Qari'a, it's like as if they are names of events that have already happened. And this is something that you see in the Quran, that Allah Azza wa Jal speaks about future events, but using the past tense. This is common in the Quran, when you read the Quran. A future event is spoken of as if it's already happened in the past. For example, at the very beginning of Surah An-Nahl, the 16th chapter, how does it begin? It begins, Ata Amrullah. فَلَا تَسْتَعْجِلُوهُ أَتَى أَمْرُ اللَّهِ فَلَا تَسْتَعْجِلُوهُ, which means أَتَى أَمْرُ اللَّهِ, which literally means the command or the affair of Allah has already arrived. It's said in the past tense. But then straight after, Allah Azza wa Jalla says فَلَا تَسْتَعْجِلُوهُ, so do not seek to hasten it. Right? So we know what the meaning, really is that the command of Allah, the affair of Allah, is most surely going to happen. It most surely is going to happen. So do not seek to hasten it. So it's a future event mentioned in the past tense to show the inevitability of its occurrence. Right? This we find common frequently in the Quran. So the Shaykh continues, وَمِنْ أَجْلِهَا تُنْسَبُ الْمَوَازِينَ لِوَزْنِ السَّيِّئَاتِ وَالْحَسَنَاتِ. And it is on account of this, meaning this worship, that the scales of measuring will be established, will be placed to measure the evil deeds and to measure the good deeds. وَمِنْ أَجْلِ ذَلِكَ تَطَايِرُ الصُّحُفِ. And it is around this worship that the scrolls of the deeds, when you are given your scrolls, the scrolls that contain all your deeds, that they will be spread out, they will be opened and spread out, and they will be given. So one person, فَهَذَا يَأْخُذُ كِتَابَهُ بِيَمِينِهِ وَهَذَا يَأْخُذُ كِتَابَهُ بِشِمَالِهِ. So one person takes his book with the right hand, and the other person takes it with his left hand. And he says, فَمِنْ أَجْلِ الْعِبَادَةِ وَقَعَتِ الشَّقَاوَةِ وَالسَّعَادَةِ. Right? It is on account of this worship that we see either happiness or wretchedness. It is all centered around this ibadah. So some people will be happy and successful, and others will be wretched and miserable. عَلَى حَسْبِ الْأَخْذِ بِمَا جَاءَتْ بِهِ الرُّسُلُ. You know, this is in accordance with to what extent a person takes from what the messengers came with. وَإِتِّبَاهِ وَإِتِّبَاعِهِ أَوْ تَرْكِهِ وَاجْتِنَابِهِ, to the extent that you follow it and to the extent that you abandon it. So he says, فَلَا نَجَاتَ لِأَحَدٍ مِنَ النَّارِ إِلَّا بِاتِّبَاعِ الرُّسُلِ وَمَنْ لَمْ يَتَّبِعْهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا فَلَا نَجَاتَ لَهُ فِي الْبَرْزَخِ وَلَا فِي يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ لِأَنَّهُ مَا بَعْدَ الدُّنْيَا مِنْ دَارٍ إِلَّا الْجَنَّةُ وَالنَّارِ. So he says, and whoever, there is no safety or deliverance for anyone from the hellfire except by following the messengers. Whoever does not follow them in this world, there will be no deliverance for him in the barzakh, in the grave, in the barzakh, nor on the day of judgment, because what is after the world is only paradise or hellfire. Right? So meaning, the only way that you can be saved as a servant of Allah, as a servant of Allah, meaning all the slaves of Allah, all the servants, whether you're Muslim or not Muslim, right? Because everyone is an abd of Allah in the general sense. The only way you can be saved is by following the prophets and messengers, right? So this means that you will not find guidance from the philosophers. You will not find guidance from the thinkers or the intellectuals or the, you know, like the spiritualists, people who speak of spirituality. Or you will not find it with, you have these self-help gurus, self-improvement, self-help gurus, which you find in abundance, you know, who try to coach people about their life and about happiness and about achievement and about success, right? All of these people are misguided individuals, and they will not bring you, you know, they will not bring you success, which is true success. Yes, they might help you make a bit of money. They might help you, you know, cope with some hardships and difficulties. They might relieve your anxiety and stress. They might give you tips and things. They might, you know, all these people. But this is not success in the life and the world, right? So all of these people are misguided. They do not have light and guidance. So do not seek it from these people. The only, so we have to stress this point because it's important. The only way to success in this life and the next is through the prophets and messengers. There is no other way, because that's the only way you can know in detail for what reason you were created, and then how to fulfill that reason, which is worship, which the messengers, they teach and they explain. And they explain ibadah, what it is, how you worship Allah, how you obey Allah, what is halal, what is haram, what is beneficial, what is harmful, what is wholesome, tayyib, what is vile and repugnant, khabith, to avoid. All these affairs only come from the light and the guidance of revelation. So the Shaykh continues, فَالسُّعَدَاء بَعْدَ مَوْتِهِمْ, those who are happy after their death, يَنَالُونَ مِنَ السَّعَادَةِ مَا لَا يُوسَفْ, that they will have such happiness that can never be described. You can't describe the happiness they will have in the hereafter. And their souls will be they will be placed, so when a person dies, a believer dies, and he's righteous, then his soul will be placed in green birds, and these green birds will perch on lamps that hang off the throne of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and they will roam freely in paradise. Right? This is the result of the believers. It is happiness. And as for the people of wretchedness, you know, then they will be in a place called Sijjin. And Sijjin is a location, a place, it's the lowest place in the lowest earth. And as for Illiyin, then that is above the seventh heaven. And this is where the righteous people, the believers, they ascend to. And obviously there's a huge difference between Illiyin and Sijjin. The Shaykh continues that he says, this is mentioned in Surah Al-Mutaffifin, وَيْلٌ لِلْمُتَفِّفِينَ, a chapter at the end of the Quran, in the last juz. And in that chapter, Allah speaks about the Illiyin and the Sijjin, and how the wretched people will be in one place and the righteous people will be, you know, in the other place, in Illiyin. So the Shaykh then goes on to say, therefore, whoever takes from the light of revelation in this world, and this light is a conceptual light, It's a conceptual light. Then he will have a physical light on the day of judgment. Right? So in other words, what we have in terms of revelation, the Quran, the ayat, the prophetic sunnah, the prophetic traditions, and what the messenger teaches us of, you know, truth and guidance and morals and manners and what is justice and what is wisdom and what is mercy and all that thing. This is, in the life of this world, this is conceptual light, meaning it's light in the sense that it is guidance. Like, we don't see, if you open the Quran, it's not as if a light's going to shine from the Quran. You're not going to see that. You're not going to see light shining from a hadith, a physical light. Because this light is the light of guidance. It is conceptual. It is a meaning. It is a ma'na, meaning. Yet what will happen is on the day of judgment, Allah will transform and convert that conceptual light into an actual physical light. And Allah has the power and the ability to do whatever He wishes. Just as in the same way, you might ask the question, how can it be that on the day of judgment, the scales that Allah will place, the mawazin, how are they able to weigh a person's good deeds? How can deeds be weighed? How on earth do you weigh a deed? Because a deed is, there's no weight to a deed. How on earth do you weigh the deed? But this is something that will become true and real. There is a way that Allah will transform the deeds of an individual and make them measurable with whatever scales, whose reality we don't know, that they will become measurable in the day of judgment. And you know, this is not hard for Allah. It's not hard for us to believe in these things, because even in the life of this world, we can see that there are things that can be transformed into other things. We see energy that is invisible can be turned into energy, into light and heat that becomes visible. Now, we know this can happen, right? So if Allah is able to do that within this creation, then surely He's able to do whatever He wills in accordance with His wisdom. This is why we say again that whatever the Quran and the Sunnah has come with, it is not some, and it can never be anything which is impossible. But the Quran and the Sunnah can come with things which boggle the mind, which, you know, the mind might find hard to comprehend, because the mind is limited in its knowledge of the realities which are hidden. So the Shaykh says that whoever takes from this light, the light of the Quran, the light of the Sunnah, then he will have light on the day of judgment, which will be physical light. And so he mentions an ayah in the Quran, Surah Ash-Shura, chapter 42, right towards the end of the chapter, verse number 52. وَكَذَلِكَ أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَيْكَ رُوحًا مِنْ أَمْرِنَا. Thus have we inspired to you the spirit of our command, meaning revelation. مَا كُنْتَ تَدْرِي مَا الْكِتَابِ وَلَا الْإِيمَانِ. That you did not used to know what is the book, nor what is faith, nor what is iman. Walakin ja'alnahu nuran, however we made it to be light, nahdi bihi man nasha min ibadina, and we guide by it whomever we will from our servants. Wa innaka latahdi ila siratin mustaqim, and indeed you, O Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, you guide to a straight path. So look at how in this ayah Allah azza wa jalla refers to the revelation which He gave to the messenger, and He made it to be as a light by which He guides whomever He wills. Then the Shaykh says, فَمَنْ لَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ حَظٌّ مِنَ الْوَحِي الَّذِي أَنْزَلَهُ اللَّهُ عَلَى رَسُولِهِ لَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ نُورٌ يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ. Whoever does not have any share, whoever does not take from this light, meaning this conceptual light, this light in terms of guidance and direction, you know, which Allah revealed upon His Messenger, then he will not have light on the day of judgment. Because لِأَنَّ الْإِسْتِنَارَ بِالْوَحِي مَعْنَوِيًّا يَنْقَلِبُ يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ نُورًا حِسِّيًّا. This is because illumination, to get illumination by revelation, this is conceptual, this is a meaning. And this will be transformed and turn on the day of judgment into a an actual physical light. And in fact, there's an ayah in the Quran where Allah Azzawajal, He says, يَوْمَ تَرَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ يَسْعَى نُورُهُمْ بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَإِيمَانِهِمْ. Right? The day on which the believers, in which you will see the believers, believing men and believing women, you will see their light proceeding ahead of them and to their right. Bushra, bushra kumul yawm, meaning given good tidings to you of paradise. And then it continues how the hypocrites, men and women, they will say to those who believe, wait for us and let us take something from your light. And they will be prevented from that. Right? So this is actual physical light that will manifest on the Day of Judgment in accordance with how much you took the light of guidance in the life of this world and how you acted upon the light of guidance in the life of this world. And finally, the Shaykh mentions, وَمَنْ لَمْ يَجْعَلِ اللَّهُ لَهُ نُورًا فَمَا لَهُ مِنْ نُورٍ. That for whomever Allah does not make any light, he will not have any light. This is Surah An-Nur, chapter 24, verse 40. Okay, so this brings us to the end of the first question, right? This is the first question. What is the first obligation upon the servants? This now leads us, so obviously there are many issues that we discussed in the first question. This now leads us to the second question. So the text of the second question is, the Shaykh says, Shaykh al-Hafidh al-Hakami rahimahullah, ما هو ذلك الأمر الذي خلق الله الخلق لأجله. So the second question now is, what is that affair? What is that affair for which Allah created the creation, you know, for it? What is that affair? So like I said to you before, in the first question, when the Shaykh answered the question, he didn't mention what the issue was. He simply said, what is the first obligation? The first obligation is to have knowledge of that affair for which Allah created the creation. But he didn't mention what the affair was, right? So now in the second question, we are answering, what is that affair? Hence, ma huwa dhalika al-amr الذي خلق الله الخلق لأجله. What is that affair for which Allah Azza wa Jal, He created the creation? Now the Shaykh, rahimahullah ta'ala, he mentions, a series of verses to answer this question. And those verses are as follows. So first of all, the Shaykh mentions, Shaykh Al-Hafidh Al-Hakami, rahimahullah, وَمَا خَلَقَنَا السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا لَاعِبِينَ مَا خَلَقَنَاهُمَا إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ وَلَكِنَّ أَكْثَرَهُمْ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. This is chapter Ad-Dukhan, which is chapter 44, verses 38 and 39. What are these verses? What do they roughly translate as? We did not create the heavens and the earth and what is in between, la'ibin, meaning out of just mere play, out of frivolity. We did not create them both except with truth, except in truth and with truth. But most of mankind, however, most of them do not know. That's the first verse. The second verse, the Shaykh, rahimahullah, Hafidh al-Hakami, mentions in order to answer the question is the statement of Allah Azza wa Jal, وَمَا خَلَقَنَا السَّمَاءَ وَالْأَرْضَ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا بَاطِلًا ذَلِكَ ظَنُّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا فَوَيْلٌ لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِنَ النَّارِ. So he says, this is Surah Sa'd, chapter 38, verse number 27. So Allah Azza wa Jal, he says, we did not create the heavens and the earth and whatever is between them in falsehood, just a mere falsehood, in vanity, right? Just frivolity, in vanity, in falsehood. This is the thought of those who disbelieve. This is the thought of those who disbelieve. So woe be to those who disbelieve from the hellfire. In other words, people like this atheist philosopher and people like him, you know, who think that even though their fitra tells them, I am made, I was meant to be here, I can only think of myself like that and a creator when I try to think about this issue. You know, it's for these type of people, ذَلِكَ ظَنُّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, right? They think that this creation is just frivolous, no meaning, no purpose, no truth, no universal truth. What is the universal truth? It is that none has the right to be worshipped except Allah, right? So they think there's no meaning, no purpose. This is the thought of those who disbelieve. So woe be to those who disbelieve of the hellfire. The third verse that the Shaykh Rahimullah cites is the statement of Allah Azza wa Jal, وَخَلَقَ اللَّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ بِالْحَقِّ وَلِتُجْزَى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ بِمَا كَسَبَتْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ. Right? Allah created the heavens and the earth بِالْحَقِّ, with the truth. With the truth. What does that mean, with the truth? What is the truth? The truth is La ilaha illallah. This is the truth. Right? So the heavens and the earth have been created with the truth. What is the truth? It is La ilaha illallah. So what is the meaning? The meaning is that Allah created man. He created around him all the heavens and the earth. He put within the heavens and the earth all the things that man needs of food, of drink, of shelter, of clothing, of partners, of, you know, love, mercy, and so on and so forth. All the things that he needs in order for him to worship his Lord, which is the truth, which is Tawheed, which is to single out Allah in worship. Right? So, وَخَلَقَ اللَّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ بِالْحَقِّ, with the truth. وَلِتُجْزَى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ بِمَا كَسَبَتْ, and so that every soul can be recompensed with whatever it has earned. وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ, and they will not be wronged. They will not be wronged, you know. So this is Surah Al-Jathiyah, chapter 45, Surah 45, verse number 22. And then we have the verse that you all know, and this is the verse, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. This is now the verse which gives us the very specific answer. It's very clear. I did not create the jinn and men except that they may worship me. Clear. This is the answer that Allah has given us through revelation, which, you know, if you look at all the misguided philosophers and the poets and the intellectuals and the, you know, whatever that people take as, you know, they've never answered this question. Why are we here? What are we doing here? What's our purpose? How do we have a fulfilling, meaningful life? Well, this right here, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ, except that they may worship Allah, because through the worship of Allah, through Allah's remembrance, through Allah's obedience, we find serenity, we find satisfaction, we secure the benefits of the world, we repel the harms of the world, meaning by way of the halal and the haram, and by way of obedience and abandoning disobedience. All of these things, we secure all of these things by way of that. And then also in another version or manuscript, also there is the passage that we mentioned just now, وَكَذَلِكَ أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَيْكَ رُوحًا مِّنْ أَمْرِنَا مَا كُنْتَ تَدْرِي مَا الْكِتَابُ لَا الْإِيمَانِ وَلَكِنْ جَعَلْنَاهُ نُورًا نَهْدِي بِهِ مَنْ نَشَاءُ مِنْ عِبَادِنَا وَإِنَّكَ لَتَهْدِي إِلَى صِرَاطٍ مُسْتَقِيمٍ صِرَاطِ اللَّهِ الَّذِي لَهُ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ أَلَا إِلَى اللَّهِ تَسِيرُ الْأُمُورِ. This is Surah Ash-Shura, chapter 42, verses 52 and 53. So again, this verse, thus have we revealed to you a spirit of our command, meaning revelation. You did not used to know what is the book, nor what is Iman, what is faith, but we made it to be a light by which we guide whomever we will from our servants. And indeed you, O Muhammad, you certainly guide to a straight path, the straight path of Allah, the path of Allah, to whom belongs what is in the heavens and what is in the earth. Verily to Allah will all affairs return. Okay, so this is the answer of the Shaykh Al-Hafidh Al-Hakami rahimahullah. And so we have, first of all, the commentary of Shaykh Al-Fawzan upon this brief second question and answer. The Shaykh says, rahimahullah, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bayyana lana al-hikma min khalqihi al-thaqalain al-jinn wal-ins, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has explained to us the wisdom in creating the two, the thaqalain, meaning the jinn and the man, which is that indeed he created them for only one thing. It is al-ibadah. It is to worship him. This is why it has come in this verse bil-hasar. Bil-hasar, meaning that Allah Azza wa Jalla said, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. This is al-hasar, meaning that this is like, that the wisdom for the creation of jinn and men has been restricted to, has been specified to the issue of ibadah, of worshipping Allah, to only one thing, right? أَنَّهُمْ يَعْبُدُونَهُ, that they worship him. So therefore, the wisdom in creating all of the creatures, all of the creations, all of the creatures and the servants of Allah, Allah created the jinn and the men, it is for ibadah. And, you know, all other things around them, they are created for their benefit. Allah subjected these things for their use so that they can seek aid by way of these things to establish the worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So everything else that we see, that we enjoy, like we said, the sun, the moon, the sun gives us warmth, energy, light, makes the vegetation grow. The moon, you know, we measure the months, we have trees, we have rain, we have winds, we have water, we have animals, we have every single thing, minerals, resources. So we have for clothing, we have for transport. Allah facilitates everything that man needs in his life, for trade, for commerce, to earn a living. All these things Allah has put in the creation, but they are not ends in themselves. They are a means to an end. And they are a means for you, for us, to seek aid by way of them to establish the worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so the meaning of liya'budun, meaning that they yufridunani bil-ibadah, yufriduni bil-ibadah, right? That they single me out in worship. Or in another, you know, some others, they say liyuwahidun, that they may single out Allah in worship, because tawheed here really is the same meaning as al-ibadah. So that's the speech of Sheikh Salih Al-Fawzan. And as for Sheikh Ahmed Al-Najmi rahimahullah ta'ala, he said, so what is the wisdom then? What is that wisdom? What is that purpose for which Allah created the heavens and the earth and the jinn and the men and the angels and all other creatures? What is that wisdom? The wisdom al-hikmat al-lati min ajliha khalaqallahu haula'i jami'an wa hadha al-kawn bi asrihi hiya al-ibadatu wal-ibtida'u biha. Right? So here is the crucial answer. The wisdom for which Allah created all of those things, heavens, earth, jinn, men, angels, and, you know, sent books, sent messengers, and so on and so forth, and for which he created all the creation and everything therein, subjected it for man's use. What is that? It is al-ibadah wal-ibtila'u biha. So now we have something additional. It is for worship and to be tested and put to trial by way of it. Right, it is to test mankind and put them to trial by way of this ibadah. And he says, mentions a number of ayat in the Quran. قال الله تعالى إنا جعلنا ما على الأرض زينة لها لنبلوهم أيهم أحسن عملا. Indeed, we have created, we have made what is upon the earth as a beautification for it, that we may test them to see which of them is best in conduct. Right, that's Surah Al-Kahf, the 18th chapter, verse number 7. We see also in Surah Al-Insan, or Surah Al-Dahr, this is chapter 76, the first and second verses. هل أتى على الإنسان حين من الدهر لم يكن شيئا مذكورا. Has there not come upon a time upon man when he was nothing mentioned? إنا خلقنا الإنسان من نطفة أمشاج نبت لي فجعلناه سميعا بصيرا. So he said, indeed we have created man from a نطفة أمشاج, like a mixed نطفة, نبت لي, in order that we may test him. And so we made for him hearing and seeing. Hearing and seeing. Also the statement of Allah Azza wa Jal in Surah Al-Mulk, this is Surah Al-Mulk, chapter 67, the first two verses. تبارك الذي بيده الملك وهو على كل شيء قدير الذي خلق الموت والحياة ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا. Blessed be the one in whose hand is the dominion, and he has power over, he is powerful and able over all things, over everything. The one who created death and life in order to test you as to which of you is the best indeed, best in conduct. And he is Al-Aziz, Al-Ghafur, he is mighty, he is forgiving. So the Shaykh says, Allah has created, فَاللَّهُ خَلَقَنَا أَصْلًا لِلْعِبَادَةِ. We've been created in principle, in foundation, for worship. وَابْتَلَانَا بِالْمُضَادِ. وَابْتَلَانَا بِالْمُضَادِ. And he has then put us to trial by whatever opposes it. مِنْ أَجْلِ أَنْ يَتَبَيَّنَ مَنْ هُوَ الَّذِي يَتَبِعُ أَمْرَ اللَّهِ عز وجل وَأَمْرَ رُسُلَهُ وَمَنْ هُوَ الَّذِي يَتَبِعُ الْمُضَادِ مِنْ أُمُورِ الدُّنْيَا. Right, so in other words, Allah has created us aslan for worship and tests us with the opposite of that to see, so that it can become clear who is the one who follows the command of Allah, command of His messengers, and who is the one who will follow those opposing, conflicting things which are from the affairs of the world. And so this is where now Shaitan, he comes along, Shaitan, Iblis, the one who expelled our father Adam alayhi salam from paradise, he then wants to come along and he wants us to divert us away from this ibadah, because he wants as many of mankind to enter into hellfire alongside him. Right? So this really, it gives us the scenario. The scenario is that Allah Azza wa Jal has created us for His worship. He put everything around us, gave us all the means, all the things which by which we subsist, by which we live, by which we do all things, in order to aid us in worshipping Him. And in the world, there are things which clash. And this we'll cover in the next lesson, inshallah ta'ala. The Shaykh mentions four things. There is al-hawa, which is, desire. There is ash-shahwa, which is lust, right? Lust. There is al-atma', meaning ambition, greed, right? People have ambitions. They want to be famous. They want to be wealthy. They want, this is ambition, al-atma', like ambitions. And then you have ash-shubha, which is misconceptions, doubts. So these are intellectual, in nature, right? So these are the things that people are put to trial with in the affairs of the world, by which Shaitan and his helpers, they come to the people and they entice them by way of these things. It is al-hawa, which is following desires in general. This is like desires where you oppose the truth, oppose what is beneficial. That's al-hawa in general. Then there is ash-shahwa. So this is lust specifically, right? This is lust. Then there is al-atma' from tama', which is like an ambition. People have ambition. That's why you see amongst the people of the world, when you see the people of disbelief, what do you see? You see like a certain structure you have. You have the heads of disbelief. The heads of disbelief. Those who have the money power. Those who have amassed riches. Right? How have they amassed riches? They've amassed riches by manipulating the ambitions of other people. So then there's people who have ambitions. You have the singers. You have the celebrities. You have the sports stars. They have ambitions. Right? So the money power allows them to fulfill their ambitions. Right? Then this group of people, the celebrities, the singers, the actors, the sports stars, they are then used to misguide the multitude of millions and millions at the ground level. Right? So through them, they impart like whatever values and you know, corrupt values and misguidance and ideas and philosophies and whatever to the multitude of people who are then misguided away through al-hawa, al-shubha, you know, shahawat, you know, through desires, lusts, ambitions, and all those other things, right? So this, inshallah ta'ala, we will look at, the Shaykh will speak about this. We will speak about this in the next lesson, inshallah ta'ala, as a continuation of question and answer number 2, meaning that we've been created for Allah's worship, but then there are things that clash with Allah's worship. And so this is where the ibtila, the trial, the test to see who is the one who's going to obey Allah, follow the messengers, worship Allah alone, and who is the one who is going to follow his desires and misguidance, right? So we see that very clearly. So among the people are those who clearly know what they are doing. They know what they are doing, like this man, this kafir, atheist, philosopher, right? So these people know what they are doing. I know there's a Lord and a Creator, that's the only thing I can think of, I can't escape this, but I want a lifestyle philosophy to follow my lusts, follow my desires, you know, that's what I want to do. So these guys know what they're doing. Then they draw other people into their philosophy, right? The multitude of millions of ignorant people, misguided people, you know, who believe these lies and you know, so they'll believe, oh, there's no God, there's no Creator, you know, I've got to make my own purpose in life and this, whatever, thinking that they are somehow some intellectual, smart people, you know, and that all of the people who worship Allah, they're some backward, ignorant. This is what they're made to believe, right? Yet the people they are following, the very people they are following, who are the source of these philosophies, they themselves are acknowledging the fitrah and belief in Allah and making it clear that they can't escape this, and making it clear that their disbelief is disbelief upon knowledge, on willful opposition to the fitrah. Right? So we'll stop there for today, inshallah ta'ala. We'll continue with what follows in the next lesson. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wa sallallahu ala nabina Muhammad, wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.